It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Nationally, honeybees are expected to decline by about 70% this year. That's according to entomologists in Washington State. The bees are facing a variety of threats, including diseases, pesticides, and varroa mites, which are becoming resistant to chemicals used to keep them in check.
The bee declines could impact a lot of crops here in Wisconsin that depend on pollinators, including apples, cranberries, cherries, green beans, and cucumbers.
To learn how bees are faring in Wisconsin, we turn now to Hannah Gaines Day, a research scientist at UW-Madison, where she studies how pollinators interact with agroecosystems. And Joseph Bezzetti is here, the president of the Dane County Beekeepers Association. Welcome to you both.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for having me as well.
Hannah, starting with you, honeybees are in decline around this country. What is the situation like here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so what we're talking about today and what we're hearing in the news right now is about managed honeybees. And I just want to point out that that's different from the wild bees that people may have heard about, mm-hmm. like the rusty-patched bumblebee. But so today we're talking about managed bees, managed honeybees. And in Wisconsin, I think, like in all states, there's a huge variation on how different individual beekeepers are doing from year to year. But on average, in the last 10 to 20 years, Wisconsin has seen about a 40 to 50% colony loss each year across the state.
What are the threats that bees are facing now? And what are you seeing in your research?
We can sort of call the threats to bees the four Ps. So we have pests, pathogens, poor nutrition, and pesticides. And so some of those have to do with internal hive management. So we have the varroa mite, which was introduced to the United States in the 1990s. And that's the main pest of honeybees, and they transmit many viruses. So that's one of the main factors influencing honeybees is the mites themselves, and then also the viruses they transmit. Poor nutrition has to do with what flowers they're able to get on the landscape. So modern agricultural landscapes look a lot different from historical landscapes. And today we have a lot fewer flowers out there for the bees to visit and collect the pollen and nectar. And then finally, pesticides. So a lot of bees are encountering pesticides in the landscapes, and that can have lots of detrimental effects for the bees, both immediately like death and also just sublethal effects, maybe how they can learn or navigate.
Would you say, Hannah, that are other pollinators in the same boat, like butterflies and beetles, are they facing similar threats as honeybees?
I would say that a lot of the things that affect honeybees are also affecting our other pollinators. It's a little bit different, though, because honeybees are like livestock. They're like little tiny livestock that the beekeeper is taking care of. And so they have someone looking out for them and feeding them and giving them medicine if they need, if they're sick. But the wild pollinators don't have that.
Joe, you're a longtime beekeeper in Dane County. How are the bees that you're working with doing?
Well, the losses each year indeed are 40 to 50%. Some people do better. Others do a lot worse. For me, the main two challenges continue to be varroa mites and the viruses that they vector, as well as nutrition. I've seen both examples, certainly in my own hives and in hives across the Dane County Beekeepers Association.
And is it similar year to year, or do you have some peaks and valleys?
Year to year, the biggest factor that I see affecting us is fall nutrition. And when we have a nice wet summer and the fall flowering plants do well, I always see an uptick in survivorship and strength of my colonies during winter. But when we have a 4 to 6 week period of really dry weather in the middle of summer, like we sometimes get, July through August, it really makes it hard for the bees to get good nutrition because those fall blooming plants just didn't get what they needed. So it's a domino effect.
Hannah, and you're out in the field a lot studying habitats and pollinators. What do you notice about, you know, whether it is wet or dry and the reaction from pollinators?
Yeah, so we've been monitoring pollinator activity for the last 5 years across Wisconsin, and we definitely see huge variations in the number of pollinators visiting in a given time, so visitation rate on flowers from year to year. And some years when there's, like in drought years, we saw higher visitation rate, and maybe that's like an effect of fewer flowers on the landscape, so the bees are all in one place rather than dispersed across the landscape. But with my work with honeybees, we see that hives that are in certain landscapes, so landscapes with more grassland, for example, they tend to do better survivorship and colony weight honey production than hives maybe in more agricultural landscapes.
Hmm. Why do you think that is?
I think going back to the nutrition aspect, certain landscapes will provide better nutrition for bees or more flowers, and certain landscapes won't provide as good of nutrition. And so when you can give your bees a healthy diet, put them in an area where they can really collect a good diverse floral resources, they're going to do better, just like Joe said.
Joe, can you walk us through what happens when honeybees are overcome with mites?
Yeah, the mites, they grow on the bees, and they reproduce inside the cell, and so they cause immediate damage to the bees inside developing in the cell that they infest. And then in addition to that, the mites carry viruses. So a very small number of mites tends not to be noticed, tends not to be a problem, because the number of bees that get affected is small at first. But then each mite that reproduces in a cell with a developing bee then produces 2 to 3 young mites itself. And so you can see this 12-day period to, you know, a 15 to 20-day cycle, you can get a quadrupling of the number of mites in the colony if the colony doesn't have any natural resistance mechanisms. So
kind of like exponential growth.
Exponential growth. And so now you're damaging those bees when they come out. Their lifespan is shortened. They don't forage as well, if at all. And they die young and early. They don't do the jobs they need to do inside the hive as well. So there's just a lot of collateral damage with that infestation. And then the viruses on top of that can really run rampant even at relatively low mite numbers. And so beekeepers that want to keep their hives healthy have to really stay on top of things.
Controlling these mites, Hannah, probably beekeepers would turn to insecticides, and you have looked at how insecticides are affecting honeybees, and especially neonicotinoids. What have you learned about that class of insecticides?
So neonicotinoids are a common pesticide used in agricultural crops. What the beekeepers are using are miticides inside their hives. And okay. So when I mentioned that pesticide exposure is one cause of pollen of honeybee decline, that's both in the hive and outside the hive. But commercial beekeepers, who are the ones who are experiencing the worst losses this year, depend on one specific type of miticide, and the mites are becoming resistant to that. Oh. And so I think diversifying mite control is going to be a big push here in the coming years.
Are there non-chemical approaches to dealing with mites?
Sure. So one approach that the University of Minnesota has been working on is developing breeding bees that are just better at removing mites from the hive. So there's a line called the Minnesota Hygienic Line that Marla Spivak's lab has developed, and those bees are just better at getting the mites out. So that's one approach. And then there are some new novel technologies coming through the line that might also be a good approach for controlling mites.
Joe, how do you control for mites? What is your go-to?
I've largely been treatment-free in my approach, which causes me to lose a lot of colonies. But when I get a colony that survives 2 or 3 years, I know I've got something special, something different. And we do know that under selection pressure, which is what the mites provide to the bees, bees that have special genetic traits that help them deal with the mites will help them survive. For the last couple of years, the club has been working with Trevor Bowden from Lloyd Street Bees. He raises a special genetic line of bees that have Varroa sensitive hygiene. So they actually detect reproducing mites inside the cells. They open up those cells and disrupt the mite's reproductive cycle. And so they can maintain a very low mite number. So we've been trying to get more of our club members interested in getting these bees. Whether you use mite treatments in your hives or not, bees that can do at least part of that job for you are beneficial for everybody. So I think it's really important for people to realize that we have these tools out there, and that people are breeding bees that have some of these natural resistance mechanisms, and to focus on you know, supporting those breeders, getting queens from them, and then selecting for good genetics in our own hives.
We are discussing how honeybees are doing in Wisconsin. Joe Bezzetti is there, president of the Dane County Beekeepers Association. And we have Hannah Gaines Day, a research scientist at UW-Madison, where she studies how pollinators interact with agroecosystems. Hannah, how do wild and commercial honeybees interact in the wild, or do they?
That's a great question. So we have sort of two, we can sort of have two groups of bees. One is the managed honeybees. Those are the ones you see in the white boxes. And then we have wild bees. And the wild bees, there are no wild honeybees. All honeybees have been managed in this country. And so the honeybees are, like I said, they're like livestock. They're considered livestock by USDA, and they're a managed organism. The wild bees and wild pollinators are mainly solitary, and the way to manage them is by managing habitat.
And you move those honeybees based on crops and harvests. Is that right? That they get moved even across state lines?
Yeah, that's correct. A huge proportion of hives in the U.S. all go out to California, for example, for almond pollination in the winter. And then they go all over the country. You know, there's blueberry pollination, cranberry pollination in the Midwest, lots of pollinators in Texas. So, yeah, they get put onto tractor-trailer trucks and shipped all over the country.
Joe, where did you start with your colonies? How did you get into beekeeping?
Well, my grandfather had bees when I was a pretty young kid, and then he lost them. And it was only later, as I learned more about what was happening, that he had lost them during the first wave of an introduced parasitic mite. We've been talking about varroa a little bit, but this was a tracheal mite. And then it was, I think, 7 or 8 years later that the varroa mites came in. So it was something that sparked my curiosity really early on. I held on to that for quite a long time. And then after I moved to Wisconsin, finished grad school, and got settled down, I caught my first swarm and got started.
And have you increased the number of colonies over the years, or do you stay pretty constant?
I started with just a couple of colonies, and of course, they swarm. You like to catch the swarms, and then I got really good at catching swarms, and I've had as many as 20 or 30 any given season, so it fluctuates, but then it becomes a lot of work. And so I like to keep it around 10 or 15 if I can, and because losses are so high in the winter, one strategy when you're selecting for mite resistance is just to try and keep a lot of smaller colonies rather than a few big colonies. It gives you more rolls of the dice genetically. And for the last, I would say, 15 years, I've never lost 100% of my colonies, managing between 6 and 25 at a time.
Hannah, does that line up with research, what you see with smaller colonies perhaps being more successful?
That's a great question. And I think that that's sort of a personal preference with the beekeepers. Some of the beekeepers I work with have smaller colonies and they do pretty well. And then other beekeepers I work with have much stronger colonies and they also do well. So I think it's all personal preference from the beekeeper and how they want to approach their management strategies.
And the landscape itself around those bees, I would imagine, also has an impact?
For sure. So the landscape, bees can fly up to about 3 miles to forage. And so where you put your hive in the landscape really matters in terms of what the bees are able to access in terms of floral resources.
Joe, what have you thought about and placed, where have you placed your bees in the landscape?
I've had bees in a lot of locations, and early on, just having the opportunity to place bees somewhere was nice. But I've realized a couple of things. One, and I think this echoes what Hannah was saying, you want diversity. In some of the areas where I've had the best success in keeping bees alive year after year, have a really nice mix. I also look for areas that have a lower percent of agricultural land. Because to get diversity, you need things that aren't cropped by farmers. And so areas that have rivers or lakes or hills where we don't have agricultural activity and a diversity of that, I do a lot of scanning the map and looking at what's in the area. And when I find a probable spot. Sometimes they approach landowners and ask if I could place a hive and see how it goes.
What do they tell you? Are they receptive?
Quite often they're receptive. Not only are people receptive, but often our club gets requests from landowners or even homeowners offering a place to put their bees, especially people who have put in native plantings or have invested any money in putting in natural prairie areas. So we get a lot of those requests. In fact, we get a lot more of those requests than our members can even take advantage of.
So how is interest in beekeeping and the association? Do you see more, less from club members?
Our club tends to have a rotating kind of a young group. People who are interested in learning join the club, kind of get the basics, stick around for a few years, and then they kind of fade away. And either it's because they've been unsuccessful and are giving it up, or it's because they've just gotten the information they need and they've grown bored. So we really have a young group, and it's kind of fun because those of us who stick it out get to teach. And so between teaching and showing and getting to know new people, it's really a lot of fun.
Are you optimistic about their ability to thrive in Wisconsin, these threats to honeybees? Do you think that they will persevere, or how do you feel about them now?
Yeah, so I think I am hopeful. I think that the beekeepers are going to continue troubleshooting and finding different ways to treat the mites. I think in Wisconsin, the other thing to think about as far as crop pollination, or pollination in general, which is a big service that pollinators provide, we have a lot of wild bees here, and we have a very diverse landscape in Wisconsin that supports these wild pollinators. And so it's sort of redundancy in the system, and we have like a backup. The wild bees are sort of a backup plan. And so if we can continue to increase floral resources in the landscape and just be mindful that our actions impact pollinators, I think that we're going to be okay.
We're going to be okay. And for you, Joe, it sounds like you're a troubleshooter in chief with the bees. Are we going to be okay? Are you optimistic?
I am actually very optimistic. Honeybees have an amazing capacity to reproduce, to evolve, even to the mites. There's a lot of promising evidence out there in the wild honeybee populations, which we study, and we look for these natural resistance mechanisms, and then bring them into the managed hives, that there's just a lot to be positive about. We don't have to always think about what's the next chemical treatment going to be. We can think about what can we do genetically with the tools that the bees have actually developed naturally and take advantage of those. And then across the landscape of both, you know, commercial beekeepers who are doing this for their livelihood and, you know, hobbyists like myself who just do it because we love it. I think everybody has something to gain, you know, with the scientific tools that are brought to bear.
Well, Hannah and Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hannah Gaines-Day is a research scientist at UW-Madison, where she studies how pollinators interact with agroecosystems. And Joseph Bizzetti is president of the Dane County Beekeepers Association. He maintains about 20 of his own hives and helps manage others for the association.